So, Trevor, we have survived the rain. I mean, the rain is great, but we've survived the rain for a November pee in a podcast.
Yeah, it's been very rainy. You wouldn't believe this, but since January this year, we've had 750 millimetres, probably more. And when our average is about 500, you realise we're 50% above average.
Oh, my God.
And this November now is the heaviest rain of the whole time. It's 170 mil plus.
Oh, my God.
Already.
That's actually amazing. So my two rainwater tanks are completely full, and even though the people put them in the wrong spot and they were going to generously empty them,
we had this last week,
5,000 litres of water into the Never Never. Yeah. So I'm putting in an extra tank. So it's very exciting if you're not in the eastern states to have all this rain.
Well, it is. I mean, everything is soaked.
Yeah.
And it's very unusual for things to get soaked. I think carrots love a soaking. I've got carrots, and so have you. I saw yours out there. And they go down. The deeper the water goes down, they go chasing it. So we might have good carrots this year.
Well, on Saturday, I went to the Salisbury Indigenous Native Plant Nursery.
Yep.
And I got home, and of course, naturally, the second I got home, it started raining. So between showers of rain, I was running out and putting seedlings in the ground and running back again and hoping that with all this rain the roots will go nice and deep.
Yeah, well, I was just looking at your garden, so we got a bit of a tour. I thought there's a good chance to do a bit about urban gardening.
I love it, because I am urban. You are not?
Well, I'm not, but I'm only 2 acres, and that's sort of, well, it's called homesteading, I think. It's only a little bit bigger.
Fancy. You're going to have to get one of those Akubra hats now, Trevor.
Everything now is going to permaculture, and that's an Australian idea, and it's worldwide.
Bill Mullinson, I am a huge fan of permaculture.
Yeah, well,
I'm also a huge fan of my dog in the background. Sorry, this is a lovely casual pee in a podcast. There's dogs, it's all happening this month, isn't it, Trevor?
Well, normally we get bird sound, but this time we get dog sound.
Sorry about that.
So, what I thought we would talk about is the people who, I mean, the world's changed after the pandemic, and there's a lot of young people are saying, I think quite rightly, that it would be good to live in a 15-minute city. Now, a 15-minute city is one where you can walk for 15 minutes and get whatever you need. Now, that isn't banking and, you can't actually buy your car, but what you can do is get your food, water, energy within a small distance, you see.
Is Gawler a bit like that? A little bit? I'm going to confess, I work very close to where I live, and normally towards the end of the year, October, November, definitely November, December, I'm walking or riding my bike to work, like the good environmentalist that I should be. I'm letting you know I'm still driving to work because the weather is so inclement that I can't turn up looking like a drowned rat. No. I have standards to keep, Trevor.
Well, there are electric bikes coming that have a cover on.
I have an electric bike, but it doesn't have a cover on it.
No, these things have got hard, see-through plastic covers on. And so things are progressing very quickly. And this, I think, is a European idea. Because
it
probably
from Holland?
Started.
Probably from Holland.
Probably
from Holland, the greatest land there is.
but what's happening to people is how our parents had a lawn and roses and fruit trees and, the standard thing out their back. Well, the young people are doing a whole sort of permaculture structure. Now, they're only using Zone 1, I think, because the Zone 1 of permaculture is the house, plus the infrastructure, plus the veggies and herbs, and possibly a bit of fruit tree too. So it's what was called the curtilage in the past, that is the fence. If you had a big farm, you'd fence off part of it so your livestock didn't eat you out of house and home. And that was called the curtilage around the house. And that's the part we're talking about in the urban gardening sense. And it's got, well, probably women don't like me talking about this, but it's got a fair bit of infrastructure. That's the one thing women seem to fail on, And that is
some of these ideas are not just from the 50s.
Well, it's just that sheds and glass houses and outdoor barbecues are more or less the male environment. It doesn't have to be.
Cut to me beating Trevor to death.
But these are...
I don't mind a barbecue, but I don't understand men's excitement over sheds. I really don't.
They're not really excited about it. It's just that they're all built by men, and therefore they tend to be in the predominant. But these infrastructure things, which are wind protection and sun shading and eating and... Really, it's the first thing you got to do. If you are going to do a permaculture plan of your place, you have to plan the whole thing. And you generally, you know, you ask people, where are you going to put your bicycle or your, you know, whippersnapper or whatever it is you've got? And where are you going to put your tools and where are you going to store your preserving stuff? Like, I noticed you've got sinks out there where you wash things and... But then you have to turn around and preserve it, and are you going to use wood instead of gas or electricity and all this stuff? So those sorts of questions are part and parcel of the urban garden, and really you need to put them in place for a start.
Well, you can see, like, in my back veranda, I've got all the grapevines, and I've got an old, very old house, and it's that south-facing,
Well, the back of it's north-facing, which is good.
Yep, and the front's covered by a veranda. The back's got grapevines, which keeps the house really cool in the summer. The only air conditioning I have is fans.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. I mean, that's what the people are trying to do. They're trying to minimise the energy consumption, and that's what you're doing and we're doing as well. But in a suburban situation, you've only got so much space, and so you are going to be, first of all, planning it. I think you have to plan it.
I'm not very good at that part, Trevor. I'm not going to lie. You're much better at that than I am.
And there's people much better than me too. For instance, the Dutch man. What's his name? Peter.
Oh, Oots. Oh, we'll have to look it up. There was our last podcast. He was fabulous.
Oh, that's right. So he's planning, and the sorts of things that you have to plan, apart from the infrastructure, are the combination of colours, heights, insect attractions, and... normal stuff like that is all part of a design, because you're actually got a fairly restricted space. And it's true that the design's going to evolve, it's going to be changing. So, I mean, everyone's good at that, because what they do is they learn as they go. So they put, you know, they put the trees in the wrong place and it shades the wrong things, and it, so they have to take it down, move it around and whatnot. But so this is what we're talking about, the small space, 1,000 square metres. Shrinking our needs down, that is, you have to be efficient in that space. So you have to get what you want out of what is quite a restricted space. Not like me, I tend to make spaces, weed them and fertilise them and wait for a crop to occur in my mind. This is the opposite. This is where you're desperate for lettuce or onions or corn, and you have to make space. And it's like you're doing there, which is a mixture, you know.
It's
polyculture in the extreme. But it's also, well, I think planning's important, but...
I guess I'm sort of trying to create a bit more of a corridor, like a wildlife corridor. You know, I've sort of spoken to the neighbour on the right, and we've actually had those conversations around, you know, because he's got bees, so I've been like, OK, I'm going to plant more plants that have got purple flowers, because we know the bees like the purple flowers. And then the people on the other side of him, they've kind of gone, oh, well, we'll plant a few more native plants to create a bit of an urban corridor, but... But that's a tough conversation. You've got to have all the neighbours on board and all that. And, you know, I do think people are getting into that a little bit more, but, yeah, you're right. It's about planning a little bit further ahead.
Well, I do think the community is part of it, but the things that you're looking at are the things that you will be doing. That is, you know, you might be brewing your own beer. You might be growing sprouts, you might be pickling, and these are going to all take place in the house, I know, but I think when you're designing these places, these tight places, you have to, well, look at all the space you've got and the elements of sun and shelter and wind and rain and soil drainage and come up with the best you can, although I accept straight away that you are going to be changing things, so it is going to be an experience. Type of thing. The other, I mean, I think you mentioned recycling, you mentioned water storage, food preservation, and also things like solar batteries and community gardens and verge landscaping and rainwater storage. You can do all these things in your own place, but you can also merge with the community, you know, and that's what a lot of these younger people are doing. You see, they actually come together very well in a community garden because that becomes their social life. They like socialising with like-minded people.
You're right, definitely. I've seen a change since the pandemic, and particularly around younger people, what they're able to afford.
Yep.
And where they're just sitting back and going, well, what do we want to do with that garden? And yeah, and where do we want to create some more social spaces? I think it's very heartening.
Well, I think a lot of people are doing it, and I mean, I think it will go into having a local food market, small sort of thing, but just for the local people in that 15-minute circle. Yeah. And then some of the gardeners will start specialising. I mean, you could specialise in mushrooms, for instance. There's a lot of good mushroom eating, and that's high protein too.
Yeah.
So you could do something like a niche market. The farmers are getting into niche markets too, but you could do it on a smaller scale in your own backyard, and you could do cheese making. I mean, certain cheeses are pretty easy. The ricotta is almost just straight away available to you when you curdle milk. And of course, all the organic veggies, each of them will have their particularly good grower. You know, you might be the globe artichoke provider for the, area or something
well,
like
I've
that.
Well, I've got a friend who has an air dryer, a food dryer.
Yeah.
And so what I do, it's, we've got a little guest turning up for a chip. What do you say? And I give her produce, like, because she's in a rental property, so she doesn't, obviously she's a little bit restricted, and she still manages to do some beautiful pots. But like recently I gave her a whole bunch of fruit that I had. And the agreement is that I'll give her all the fruit or whatever. She'll dry them and then we'll go halves. And it's lovely because we both effectively live on our own, so we don't need 50 tons of whatever we've got.
That's brilliant.
But it's actually a really lovely way to, I guess, share.
Well, just about every one of your crops is going to provide you with more than you can eat.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even the best crop, you know, even the strawberries, you have to pick them every second day.
Yeah.
And so you end up not eating them all, and the chooks and the bugs get them. But that sort of thing, all your excess. And you always have excess, always. If you have a good crop, like I had a good potato crop, it's hard-pressed to eat it all whilst it's fresh, you know?
Yeah, you get excited for the first few days.
Yeah, a bit
like when you've got broccoli, and then finally you realise people are running down the road to get away from you because you're giving them broccoli.
That screaming you hear.
Zucchinis, where people are finally like, stop, we don't want no more zucchinis.
But I also think it does involve flowers, you know. To me, I've only recently come over this point of view, but if you're growing flowers, they're also highly commercial and usable thing, in that flowers in your house is not only a deodorant and a visual display, but it's also, I think it brings life, makes it a good mental thing, you know. So
it's a lovely cheap decoration. I remember growing up and coming home, I don't know why, but Fridays was the day that Mum cut flowers for the house. And so you'd come home on a Friday and Mum would have, she didn't have fancy vases or anything, but she'd keep the lovely jars. And so all through the house, every room would have the new bunch of flowers. And I even remember as a kid being like, just loving that kind of abundance sort of thing, and then picking flowers to bring to people's houses and things. I love that.
Well, as long as you're not being sexist, I think there's a mob of men at the door beating down the door saying, why can't we do this as well?
I will put flowers in your shed, Trevor.
So these are the things that I'm actually getting from YouTube. I mean, this is a feeling I'm getting that, okay, within any community there's a whole mixture of people.
Yeah.
I mean, there are the women who have got the false eyelashes and all that sort of thing, and they're not really interested in the garden, you know. But there's also quite a lot who are, and the taste is there. You can see that the chefs have become quite militant, and that the chefs now are saying they won't cook with gas because of the way the world supply is working. But they're also the leaders in taste. They're buying from small growers.
Yeah, they are actually, yeah.
Because you get the taste. I mean, I just pick my carrots and they just disappear in your mouth. There's no chewing or anything, you know, and you can use them raw.
Well, my granddaughter and I, the last year's crop of carrots, which I've actually had 2 years, two good carrot crops actually in a row, which is probably more about me watering them than anything else. But we were just getting them, dunking them, washing them and standing there eating them. And I remember her father, we'd eat straight from the garden because there was all this beautiful freshness, and then come inside and, you know, you wouldn't need dinner because you've just foraged. I love that. And I love that a lot of those chefs and stuff are talking about buying locally.
Yep.
And they are happy to kind of...
buy small quantities.
Buy small quantities, but from local people.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I think you could probably make a living out of having packages. I mean, people will pay an annual salary to get a box or whatever is seasonal.
Yeah.
You know, it might be unexciting, like carrots and onions and broccoli or something, but it can also be... that time of year when strawberries are on, you'd be the most popular man in town. Oh,
tell you what. So. Yeah. And that was another thing that, you know, you can dry strawberries and they still taste as fabulous. Like fresh ones, not the shop-bought ones.
I think you do have to be organic. I don't think there's even an alternative to that, quite frankly, because what we've found out, and I've talked about it before, is that the soil has got so many microorganisms in it that the plant is not an independent thing. The plant's depending upon those microorganisms to digest the minerals and the elements in the soil and hand it over to the plants who are extruding, I think, sugars and carbohydrates through their roots to feed the animals that are feeding them, you see. Yeah. So it's absolutely out of the question that you can kill the soil. And that's essentially what the chemical groups are doing. They're actually killing all that life, you know.
And like I was saying to you before when I was showing you my veggie garden, is that 6 months prior to planting, I was planting the bokashi bucket mix and then I was piling on all this gorgeous manure and everything. And then it's the best veggie garden I've had in a really long time. And I've had the raised garden beds and I've done the right soil and the organic stuff, but that absolute nutrition in the soil has been unbeatable.
Well, I mean, we've recently harvested potatoes and, you know, they cook faster, you could eat the skin.
Yeah.
There's so many pluses with the stuff you grow at home organically that it's got to win. And so all this is based upon taste, really. The people are coming to this for the taste.
I made a potato and leek soup with potatoes and leeks from the garden.
Mm.
And the potatoes, like, it all cooks quicker even.
Yeah,
it was just like, it was just delicious.
Mm.
Delicious. You feel better afterwards.
And you mix that with what you're calling a wildlife corridor or something like that. You put in the flowers, you put in the beauty, you put in the smells, and you've got something that quite obviously is good for your mental health.
Absolutely. Yeah, I went and picked some rainbow chard and some herbs because I went to go visit my friend in Goolwa, Leah, and just grabbed a bag of all that sort of stuff. And, you know, maybe I was out there not even 5 minutes. And then, like, for about 2 hours afterwards, I was, like, in this really funky good mood. And you think, actually, it is because you're out there. And you're kind of going, look at me, what I grew. Super cool.
All right, well, I mean, we probably should have it. We're getting towards the end, I guess, because we're under all sorts of time pressure. We should really advertise our quiz night, in which there will be some things from Two Peas in a Podcast available. And these things are really meant for people to start collections with. There'll be a white Genoa fig, which is a beautiful fig. There'll be a purple table grape that is sweet and seedless. There'll be the buddleias, the famous butterfly bushes.
I love buddleias, love them.
And there'll be a carob tree, and there'll probably be a spotted begonia. So these are things where you get one and you can collect the whole lot, because each one of them has got a massive family. And we mustn't forget that there are people too who do that. That's what they do when they garden. They're just so keen on categorising everything, on collating everything, that they spend most of their time drawing it or writing its proper name down and stuff like that. So all of those things are... yes, one fig tree is good, although it's a big thing, a fig tree. So.
I know, I've got one fig tree. I'd love more, but they are a big...
yeah, they're very big. Well, they will grow very big.
But you can keep them small. Like all my fruit trees, I kind of, every year when I trim them back, I trim them to probably no more than about 2 metres.
Yeah.
Because then I can sort of pick the stuff off them. You know, if they're any taller than that, I'm sort of like...
they do really... I mean, olives and fig trees they've literally chainsawed it to the ground and it still grows, you know. So, but the grapes are beautiful for sun protection, as you found out here, and they make a beautiful juice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all the fruit trees can be juiced.
And we took, so last season I had a heap of grapes, surprisingly. No, the season before, sorry, last season I had the fire, but the season before. And I took them to my friend who dried them all, which is hilarious because dried grapes go from this great big grape to this tiny little sultana. Yeah. And it's a little bit sad until you eat it. So I'd taken two big shopping bags full of grapes, and we kind of both agreed we didn't mind the occasional stem. So she spent a couple of days drying them, and we both ended up with two decent-sized jars of grapes, but we were laughing, from two big bags. And I kept mine on my desk at work, and the 3 o'clock slump, I call it the 3 o'clock slump, where if you're not careful, you go to the vending machine and you get your chocolate. And so I was having these handfuls of grapes, and they were just, they were amazing.
Yeah, you're very good at that. I mean, there is an art to packing lunch and...
definitely.
Well, yeah, trying to keep it wholesome, and because there's so many things on the market that aren't. So I do think if you've got a spare time, come along to the quiz night on December the 3rd.
Yep, at the Gawler District College. And look, it's a really good fun. There is going to be lots of prizes. You'll get to meet two peas in a podcast. Nita won't be meeting us. Apparently she's a bit busy that evening. But we are desperately hoping to win for a change. Right.
We need talent, but it's okay. We'll manage without it.
We manage without it. I've got some mad keen quiz nighters, so that'll be really good fun.
Yep.
And, yeah, they'll be part of the raffle prizes, which are fantastic, because what's a fig tree cost in the nursery now? $25. It's just brilliant. So we do desperately want you to come. And then next podcast, we'll talk about how we won the quiz night in Mad Hope.
Not a chance.
We'll talk a little bit about Christmas. We'll talk about what the weather's doing. Also, what do you reckon? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking collecting your own seeds.
Yeah.
Like I got a massive crop of broad beans. I can give you enough to plant an acre, you know.
Oh.
So I also...
I make great falafel from your broad beans, by the way. Yeah. Now you gave me all those broad beans.
No, I've forgotten, but it was probably the one who's not going.
Anyway, I sat there and then I was going to turn it into one thing and then I went, broad bean falafel. Grow broad beans just for broad beans.
Oh, well, you told us that recipe.
Yep. But I didn't end up doing that one.
Oh.
No, I made falafel. You've got to make broad bean falafel.
Okay, well, see, these are good hints.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you can have a life of experiencing delightful food if you know how to cook. So that's what's coming. I think sweet peas can be saved.
Yeah.
I'm already planting my own bean seeds. So there's quite a few seeds that are very easy to collect. There's quite a few plants that are very easy to collect, actually.
Let's talk about seed saving next. Because I remember growing up and my Alpa's garden, you'd go out there and there would be paper bags on the seeds and then you'd cut them and then in his shed would be paper bags with the names on them. And I don't recall him ever buying a seedling. And I love that idea.
Well, a lot of the plants that have been given away have actually come from cuttings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these begonias are growing from a leaf, I think. Just a little stem and a leaf.
Yeah.
And same thing goes, well, the carob bean is a very good thing of growing itself. You've got no trouble at all. But there are a lot of plants where you don't have to go to the nursery. You can grow them yourself.
Absolutely.
You can divide them yourself.
And how exciting to be like, this is what I've harvested from last year's crop. So, all right.
We have to go.
What a shame. But anyway, we'll go to the quiz night in a couple of weeks, Trevor, where we will win. They've never got enough gardening questions. Have you noticed that?
I'm scared of us.
I know. I think they are. I think they're terrified. We should make our own. thing. All right. So, I don't know if you can hear the rain in the background, but it'll be December when we meet you next.
Yeah, I don't know when it'll still be raining. It could be.
It could be, hopefully. So goodbye from Michelle.
And goodbye from Trevor.